Hey, folks, it's Spoiler in Time. This is the show where Brian Brushwood and myself, Tom Merritt, look through some of the things we've been watching because of all the hard work we do on Cord Killers, telling you how to watch things. We watch them and we talk about them here. This episode, we're going to talk about Firefly, The Message, Stranger Things episodes 1-7 of season 2, Mr. Robot season 3, episode 3. Except, Brian, you haven't watched that one.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean I don't have opinions about it. I'm pretty good like that. I can chime in whether I've seen it or not.
You know, if you were a woman, I'd call you Claire.
I don't know what that means.
Clairvoyant.
Oh, and now I'm sad that I now know what that means.
Movie Jam!
All right, Tom, how you feeling?
Jigsaw made $16 million.
We're so screwed, right?
We are totally screwed. Jigsaw, I decided to actually look at our estimates. And granted, all these estimates are wrong, right? Our estimate for Kingsman was $104 million. It only made $97 million. Our Battle of the Sexes estimate was $16 million. It only made $12 million. So everything's falling under estimate. But Lego Ninja Movie was supposed to make $117 million. It made $56
million. Yeah.
Jigsaw was supposed to make $39 million. It's made $16 million. It's
That's not
going to get above 30.
That's not great. Yeah.
The Snowman, which we barely paid anything for, and I'm just like, oh, it's not going to make any money, no big deal. The Snowman was supposed to make $18 million. It's made $6
million. Yeah. This is a haunted year. You want to know the spookiest movie? It's called The Morning Returns on box offices this year.
That's the movie?
It's a movie. Yes, I'm making a movie.
I feel like our strategy, which has been very sound for me in the past, of just like hoover up the stuff people don't like, is especially bad this time because the box office seems to be like, if it's really good, people will pay for it. Otherwise, they won't.
Yeah. Well, and keep in mind also, during the summer, and this is talking through how you play our game, the movie draft, you feel spoiled for choice. You look at all of the properties and you're like, that's going to make all the money in the world. That also will make all the money in the world. And of course, none of them can make all the money in the world. You got to pick out the real winners. Whereas I think this is the reverse. This is winter is always half the movies you don't recognize. None of them big franchises. A lot of them, if they are big franchises, they're wringing out the last few dollars that are to be had in them. Look, if I had to place an even money bet right now, I would bet $200 right now that Frog Pants is going to win this with Star Wars at 85%.
Yeah, because Team Jury's in the lead with $161 million. And Jury's had Happy Death Day, The Foreigner, Tyler Perry, all make in the mids, you know, 20 to 40 million, nothing huge. But he's got the $48 million from American Made, and his Costco plan is paying off. He still has Coco and Molly's Game. Those aren't a lot. He's got Jumanji, which I think may suffer from the malaise that is affecting other movies. So that would seem to pave the way for Team Frog Pants to win.
Well, let's be astonishingly generous here and say Coco's, Molly's Game, and Jumanji all somehow total up to $200 million at the box office. Yeah. That puts Justin out at $360 million. And you're telling me that 85% of The Last Jedi isn't going to crush that? You're telling me that Cord Killers isn't going to come in and overleap that just with Thor Ragnarok? I mean,
I believe Thor Ragnarok's probably going to tell the tale of whether there are exceptions. Thor Ragnarok may be one of the exceptions to this winter malaise. But even if it is, I don't think it's enough to bring Cord Killers up to Last Jedi. And I believe Last Jedi will certainly be an exception.
Yeah, I think Thor Ragnarok is going to be an astonishing litmus test. When does that come out, this week or next?
It comes out November 3rd, so it's coming out this week. Bad Moms Christmas, which is Team Champions, that's us, is the other movie out this week.
Yeah, don't. You know what? I'm gonna actively say stop supporting us. We were bad stewards of our chances, and we deserve to fail.
Honestly, I mean, I actually still don't feel bad about the rest of our slate. The best is yet to come. Daddy's Home 2, which has an all-star cast, is getting a ton of marketing. Murder on the Orient Express, which has some Oscar buzz, and people are saying, oh, you really should see it. And Pitch Perfect 3, which is a franchise. But even then, things are just underperforming, and I don't think it pulls us out of the hole we're in.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Mr. Robot. Now, Bryce and I have watched it. We are going to spoil Brian on it. Yeah. But really, the only thing I think you're going to be spoiled on, Brian, is the fact that this is entirely a flashback episode of what happened to Tyrell Wellick while he was out of commission, with slight crossovers. Like, we see him make the call to Elliot when Elliot's in prison, and we see him come downstairs to get in the cab.
So this is all a look. We're going out of our way to prove to you that Tyrell Wellick is really an actual human being who is alive and not like Mr. Robot. Okay.
Right. And I like that they are filling out the timeline, because I think the thing I didn't love about season two was how messy it starts in regards to, like, where was Elliot? And now what's going on? Like, I'm glad that it's being like, this is what happened. There's no more confusion about what is happening or what did happen. But also the time that Tyrell spent in hiding was not the most interesting thing in the world, right? Like, he's out in a country home and he's chopping wood and he does some code and he...
It kind of feels to me like a way to make sure Bobby Cannavale's character Irving is shoved into the rest of the story, because really what it is Irving and Wellick interacting from the popcorn machine scene from season one, where Cannavale, where Irving shows up. Oh, we never saw that part. Through Irving hiding him in the country, all the way to Irving setting him up in the house where he's going to get the cab. And we know that Irving has talked to Angela about how to set this up for Elliot. It really feels like, and I hate to use the word shoehorning because he's a perfectly legitimate character, but it felt like a lot at once to be like, I know we didn't show you Irving before now, but here he is, and he's really important.
But now he is, it's not even retconning. He is a part of the story that we never told.
Yeah. We know he was doing vinyl back in the first two seasons, but now he's here, so let's put him in the story.
There were a few other like non.
Wait a minute, is this the dude who is upset about the shake in the very first episode?
Yeah.
Oh, that's yeah, everything. The out of time 70s looking guy. Got it. Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
We also did get we got some other bits of like not Wellick story. Right. We saw the part with White Rose dealing with the E Corp chairman about currency stuff and really getting like directly like what E Corp wants is to be able to annex part of the Congo, and that's supposedly the whole reason for all of this phase two hullabaloo.
Yeah, yeah, right on.
Yeah.
And also a very weird like, and also we're going to influence the U.S. election and cut to the TV showing.
Now, that really is retcon. Like, there's just no two ways about it, right?
That was so weird.
And I don't blame them for taking the bait and being like, hey, this really does kind of slot in nicely right here.
Sure. I mean, if your thesis is the world has gone insane, there are certain things that organically fall into place, right?
Yeah. And then...
Well, it's taking... I think they did it well for the fact that they did it and they know all of us are going to go, you're doing a magic trick. I can see your hands. But they show Donald Trump early in the primaries when he's far behind and people are not taking him seriously. And you see White Rose go, him. And they're like, what, him? No, not him. like, yes, him.
Oh,
and of course,
great.
We all know there's an unexpected groundswell and he ends up becoming president.
That's right. Great.
The other not bit of Tyrell story, right, is where Joanna, we see Joanna die or get murdered.
Oh.
And I don't know if that, I guess that's supposed to also slot in during Tyrell being gone.
Yeah.
I don't, do we?
I mean, we saw that last week.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is you just said that, and I was like, wait, have I watched this episode? Because I remember her dying, but I don't remember much about the context of her dying.
Right.
What
was she is, I don't know if it's directly her coming back from a live taping of some TV
Oh, that's
show.
Right. Yeah. She went out and was the public face of like, hey, man, I'm here to talk about some real stuff. And they're like, we can't have that.
Well, and also part of it is like, you know, that lover guy that she had helped frame one of the E-Corp guys for the murder. Yeah.
Yes, of the wife.
Again, this is all last week's episode.
Right,
that isn't in three.
Yeah, and so he's like, "Hey, she's about to love me, and she went on television.
Now she's saying, 'Love you.'"
So the lover follows them at some point in the car, and the bodyguard notices they're being tailed, stops, and tries to rough him up, and instead he comes back with the gun and shoots both of them, and then with her dying action shoots the lover back. So that
that's right. And this was all at the end of episode two.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Then so this is expounded upon.
Got it.
And then we also see that her child is sent to social services.
Also, chat room is a big fan of your Tyrell accent. Can Tyrell?
Deborah. Wow, are you Tyrell. Scandinavian?
But so far, like a very low stakes episode.
Yeah, and honestly, this is part of the problem is. In deciding whether to talk about this in front of Brian, even though he hasn't seen it, Bryce and I both were like, there's really nothing really huge here. Mm. And that's the problem. If you're going to have a flashback episode that tells me all the secret things that Tyrell Wellick was up to,
he should have done.
You
got
to have better big points than he tries to escape from his hideout and gets a local cop killed and they have to undercover it. Or here's the part where he picks up the phone and talks to Elliot. And wow, he's actually in a way different frame of mind than it sounded like on the other end, but it still makes sense. Those are cool scenes, but honestly, I don't feel like I gained as much as I should have from spending this much time finding out about his backstory.
It didn't progress the story at the end of the day.
Did it? I guess by virtue of it being retroactive, it probably did not. But what I'm hoping is, did it progress the narrative of the degradation of planet Earth? Like, that's one of the things that I'm cautiously.
I mean, other than the election stuff, no.
That's my favorite thing that Mr. Robot has teased, but not yet definitively introduced, mm-hmm. is the idea that we are watching the full-on downfall of a society into chaos, and we go into full Fallout 4 territory. That would be
amazing. I get the feeling that's not where this is headed.
Ah, that's a bummer.
I think the most meaningful thing we're supposed to take away from this episode is how desperate Tyrell becomes during that time in hiding. We see him when we saw him in episode one or the end of last season. You know, he was thinking that this was basically his holy charge.
Cause.
Yeah. And so we get to see the sort of desperation and loneliness that Tyrell had to endure. And I guess that's to justify his unwavering commitment to Elliot specifically, not just the Dark Army's plans, but.
The hardest thing for them to justify, especially given where they go with his backstory, is how does he go from being a great admirer of Elliot? And in fact, in this episode, he basically says, Elliot is chosen by God to be the one that I work with because, you know, when he tried to shoot me, the chamber jammed and it didn't kill me. And going from there to killing or trying to kill Elliot by shooting him in the warehouse. After he was so excited to finally get back with Elliot, I think they kind of make the case, but I'm only partially convinced that he would have been so upset that Elliot didn't believe he was real that he would shoot Elliot.
Yeah, it's still like well shot, and the little stories that it tells are good, like the bit about him leaving the camp and the cop, you know, arresting him, and you think, oh, the cop is going to be in on it and is making a real long joke and is going to take him back. Like, it tells all that stuff fine in the Mr. Robot way, but in a week-by-week thing, it's not great. I think I was confusing a lot of stuff with episode two, honestly, because I watched them both today.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't have a great delineation between the two.
I think people who binge Mr. Robot are going to get more out of this episode than we are right now, because I have a feeling a lot of this will play out or pay out in future episodes. But when you're going week to week and you're like, okay, I watched that, now what? Mm-hmm. It does feel like you're kind of left with not much to go on.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Stranger Things episodes 1-7. So not the finale. I actually consider 8 and 9 to be a two-part finale to Stranger Things because of where they leave us in episode 7. So I think this is a nice breaking point to talk about the series up until the final events. And Brian, that's where you left off. You just finished up episode 7. I've watched all of them now, but I will not talk about episodes 8 and 9. How do you feel about it?
To be safe, how about we start with episode 7 and work our way backwards?
Mm-hmm.
We'll be
fine,
ruining everything for Bryce. He'll no longer episode. Be able to enjoy it.
But he just ruined Mr. Robot for you, so it's fair.
Episode 7, I feel like, did some good and interesting substantive world building, but it was utterly hollow as a character piece. You have Eleven meeting her erstwhile, am I using the word right? Erstwhile sister,
yeah.
8, and you essentially get a glimpse of a future that might be there for Eleven should she take it. But you have a bunch of characters that don't make any sense, and nothing, they're not fleshed out, and they're all cartoons, and it's cold and callous and murderous and unattractive. I would have hoped they would have presented us with that in such a way that we would feel some moral conflict, where it's like part of us like, no, I think she should join. But it was so very obviously like, this is a dumb choice. None of us want her to go and be part of this tribe of punks and bandits and whatever with their ill-defined, you know, mission of vengeance. And as a result, because I was never tempted to want to root for her to join them, I felt nothing for her not joining them and stuff. Although it was working backwards from that, is episode 7 also the episode where they get Hooper out from the Upside Down, where he's choking under vines and all that?
No, that was 6.
That was 6.
Okay. Yeah, no, episode 7 is almost entirely in Chicago.
Okay, yeah, which I think I hated it. I think I hated it. And by the way, hated is code for liked the least, because you have to arrange them all in order.
It's your antithetical Tom's like it, love it, gotta have it.
correct. He's got his scale, I've got mine. Mine is, I didn't hate it with the burning fire of 12 hells. I only massively disliked it.
It was fine is equivalent to I hated it on Brian's scale.
Yeah. But okay, so dialing it back a little bit more, I loved the idea of Hooper being trapped in Hopper. The Upside Down, or is it Hopper or Hooper?
Hopper.
Yeah, you sure about that? He says sarcastically, knowing that he got busted.
Looper.
No, it's Hopper. You're right.
You like that he got stuck underground?
No, I like calling him Hooper is what I like.
Hooper.
I like that power dynamic flipperoo that they did. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah. You know, starting with 7, I don't end up in much of a different place than you, which is to say that I'm like, I really hope she chooses to go back to Indiana, because honestly, nothing else makes sense. And I'll be really disappointed with this story if that's not what she does. So I felt a little relief when she chose it, but for the wrong reasons. I didn't mind that the cast of characters felt like a really cool, like 80s movie homage. Like, I've seen plenty of those movies with that guy and that guy and that girl. And that was fine. I was willing to roll with that. I didn't need them to be deep characters, but I did need their mission to be compelling. And I think that's what we're both reacting to, which is, I kind of get it. Like, they've all been injured and they're going to have revenge on the people that injured them. But I never felt it. I never really felt in my bones that they could convince Millie to do that, or to convince Jane to do that. I did buy the sister bond. I thought that was done fairly well. I did feel like Jane really felt like Jane now, and felt like, hey, I'm a real person, and this is the first time I felt like a real person, and here's somebody who understands what I went through, and she's become different, and I could become like that. Like, I think there is a good element there that can play out in seasons 3 and 4, but it didn't do anything for this season.
Yeah, there are two moments that I felt like this season had forced moments. One is, I think I felt very forced into Eleven being possibly seduced into joining the dark side and joining a punk gang. The other one was, I felt like I loved the reveal of Hopper. This is before he changed his name to Hooper. Decided he was acting as a father figure to Elle.
Yeah.
I loved that, but then their typical teenager fight thing, just like, as, and I'm sure this is colored by the fact that I am the current parent of a teenager, I just look at them like, you're just handling that so wrong. That's cartoonish.
I was about to say, I'll defer to you, but the fact that you say that makes me think, so they actually did it right. You just didn't like you're coaching him. You're like, come on, man.
Well, but he overreacted so badly that it didn't.
He has
even,
no guidance on this, though. Wouldn't that make sense?
Well, yeah, it did. It was so far off base. It didn't even fit into my ability to conceive of anybody handling a young teenager that way. You know,
because you have teenagers. I think that's blinding you. You're like, come on, man.
Could be. I'll be the first to admit that. But I didn't. I found that unpleasant in the show. So there's that.
I found that believably unpleasant. And you're right. It may have been over the top. But the fact that it happened didn't bother me at all. Like, yeah, no, that she would push back, and she would want to find her mom, and she would leave in defiance. And that all makes sense. The actions make sense. Even if how they played out may or may not have convinced everybody. I also really liked Mad Max, and when they first brought her in, I was like, oh, so they're forcing us to have an 11 fill in while they have 11 go do other things in the cabin in the woods. But she won me over the course of the episodes by not being just the rebel girl, but also not being easily accepted by the group.
And also at the point I'm at in the story, they have not yet, they've heavily teased that something very unusual is surrounding the circumstances of her joining the town, of her and her, I can't tell if it's her brother or father, or I don't know what, where it's just like, well, I guess we're stuck together.
Mullet man.
What's that?
Mullet man.
Yeah. By the way, Mullet man is my favorite character in the show. He's great. I loved the fact that they gave a side quest to, Dustin and, boyfriend boy, going around, even if it's just a, you know,
Steven, is that his name? Steven?
Who cares?
That sounds right. I think it's Steven.
Steve Harrington.
But, I loved the kind of shakeup of characters and taking everybody out of their established roles and giving them new challenging situations to do. Some of them have worked out very, very well. Some have not. It's a bit of a bummer I'll just say a bummer. I wish they had come up with a more clever, interesting way to make Will distant from the group like he was in the first thing, rather than he's got a disease now, so that's why he's distant this time, not really a part of it. He's in a coma. He's, constantly in peril or whatever. That's probably unfair for me to say, because I don't know. I can't think of anything better for them to have done. But it seemed, again, like kind of a forced return to the paradigm that made the first one work.
Well, yeah. I mean, definitely they are they are replicating, like, Will is in peril from the down under, from the upside down.
No, I like the down under.
Australia.
Hooper has to go to Australia so that he can play basketball against a kangaroo to get Will back.
But I think what they're doing with Will is a little like pseudoscience, which this whole thing really is, and calling it a sickness isn't as inventive as it as I would have hoped they would have come in. But again, I don't have anything better for you either. So
I'll tell you what, though, in that regard,
but when we see the big monster infest him, I imagine something way more than like, hey, he's got, you know, the upside down flu, you know.
Well, and plus also, they've never really established, is he seeing into the other world or is he physically there? Because on the one hand, they depict him as if he's physically there, and they certainly indicate that when alien smoke goes in your face, you're physically infected. But the way they snap him out of Australia is to shake him, indicating that he's been there the entire time. And suddenly,
well, he describes it as being in the Viewmaster, right? Like caught in between the frames. So my interpretation of that was, oh, he's in both.
Like sure.
He is literally in both places.
Yes. And I do agree that they almost certainly have worked out the internal logic for all that stuff. I'm just saying, I wish I was able to appreciate it in a more visceral, kind of gut punchy kind of way. I will say this much though. There is one superstar of Stranger Things 2. When did Sean Astin become Patton Oswalt?
Dad, you beat me to it. Because first episode, first time he shows up on the screen,
it's Constable Bob.
I'm like, oh, wait, it's Samwise. But why does he look like Patton Oswalt? Literally, that is what I said to Eileen sitting next to me. And she's like, oh, yeah, he's totally acting like Patton Oswalt. Like, I'm like, did they want Patton Oswalt for this?
Are you ready?
And couldn't get him. And they're like, Sean, can you just Patton Oswalt it?
So I mused about this exact thing on Twitter.
I saw.
And somebody said, yeah, this was shooting exactly during the time Patton Oswalt was in mourning after losing his wife.
Oh.
And then suddenly I was like, oh, not only does that make sense, that makes so much sense that I'm not even comfortable having this giggle about it anymore.
Yeah, no, that does change everything. And that doesn't mean that he was going to get the role.
Correct.
But it certainly is a less fun scenario to muse about, isn't it?
Correct. But I will say Sean Astin does a fantastic job. And even if he is playing the same character that Patton Oswalt would have played, that changes nothing. He's still adorable. Oh my God, he's so adorable, Tom. He works at Radio Shack and he's the geekiest and he's so trusting and they're saying you can't ask questions, but he plays along anyway and he solves the riddle. So adorable.
What I really like about Bob Newby is his name is Newby.
Is that an intentional like
I know you hate that kind of thing, but I really do feel like it is.
I don't know. I don't know if I hate it.
Sheriff Clever. Sheriff solves them all.
Oh yeah.
Solverson. That's what it was. Solverson. I just love that he is genuinely that guy to the point where like in an actual 80s movie, he would have been the dupe.
Right.
But they're like, no, he's just going to be a genuine guy and she really likes him and he really wants to help. And he has just resisted enough when they bring him in, where he's like, wait a minute, what is going on? Like, this is not okay. But then when he realizes it's a puzzle, he's like, all right, fine. I want to solve this puzzle. So I guess I'll just ignore the alarm bells for now and play along, which is great.
There is one thing, and again, this is me wishing for an alternative universe, and I don't have an answer of how to get there, but part of me deeply would have adored seeing a sideways universe where Winona Ryder's time as playing the crazy eyed person was just completely over. And she was just balanced and healthy and happy mom with the
that's
the
season
lemonade.
Four. You got to hold that.
I mean, I don't know. I think
Will going through this all over again brings out the crazy eyes. Again.
I understand. And that's part of why I kind of wish, I mean, let Will be the new member of the team and let them face a fundamentally different type of foe and let me see people in shifted roles. And
I just don't think that's the story they're telling. I agree. How Australia dominated Will.
Correct. I understand. But
it's an interesting thing to think about.
That's what I wish for, but that's fine that I'm not getting what I wish for.
I do really like how they took, you know, the bad boy, the bully boy, Steven from season one, and they are like, we've now outbullied you with Mullet Man. What are you going to do now? What is your reaction here? I find that really interesting too.
Yeah. I was going to ask you to speculate where they're up to with the flashbacks with Matthew Modine, with Papa showing up. But you already know. And I guess really it was just a little teaser with the sister plot. Meh.
So I'm not at episode 7, but they keep saying all of those people died. And it's making me think that maybe
are you saying you don't believe them when they say they're dead?
I'm just saying it's the sort of thing that you would say a lot if it was not true.
Oh, you know what? Almost along the lines of Sean Astin is Paul Reiser's character.
Oh my God, Paul Reiser is great. And it's a great throwback to Aliens Paul Reiser before he was everybody's eunuch husband. Back when he had edge to him. It's great to see a return.
And what I love is like at the beginning you're like, "Oh, I get this guy. He plays nice, but he's the new Matthew Modine. He's the new face of evil." And then you're like, well, wait a minute. He's actually being really nice. Like, maybe he is really nice. Like, maybe he's just trying to, you know, bureaucrat trying to do his best to clean up a mess. Like, I don't still, I don't think this is a spoiler. At the end of the series, I still don't know.
I'm so glad to hear that because I really got that vibe. He has perfectly mastered that caring, patient pediatrician vibe, right? Where he's just like, "Hey kiddo, how you doing? Well, you know, we're gonna work on this." And he's got this great bedside manner, and yet he's also aware and not entirely wrong when he says, "Yeah, there's stuff it's our job to keep secret. I'm sorry, sorry, kiddo. This is the world we live in."
No, you know? I think it was brilliant that they, instead of putting another guy who's like, "I'm gonna use the need for secrecy to hide my evil plan," you're like, maybe he is finally the one guy who's like, "No, we just really need to keep it secret. Like, that's it."
Yeah. It's like, look, it's nothing nefarious here. We're just saying, like, if somebody wanted to use this as a weapon, this would be a pretty bad weapon. We can all agree that we don't want the Reds to have the ability to open these all over our country. Right? So we're going to keep
it
a secret.
Right now, there are sleeper agents in Washington, D.C. that look like the girl from Felicity, and we need to stop them.
I knew you were going to head right there. Shall we move on to Firefly?
Yeah, let's go to Firefly. The Message, which I feel like watching it this time around really, really starts to point to the kind of episodes they would have done more of, where the past for Zoe and Mal comes back to haunt them in some way, and there's a strain between how they deal with it and how the crew deals with it. And it was really cool to see a member of their past, even though he's not in the pilot, the scene that they show of the flashback of them fighting the war is like, "Oh, right. Yeah, no, Mal and Zoe, they were fighting for the Browncoats. I remember this now." And you could almost imagine that he was in that scene, even though he wasn't. And so I find it really believable that he's an old army buddy of them. The story itself of, you know, I'm hiding organs running is pretty inventive. I still don't think I've seen anybody do it that way. And otherwise, it's a straight ahead Firefly story for me.
So there was a particularly poignant, to my surprise, there's a lens that I saw it, I can't unsee this episode through, and that was listening to the director's commentary. This would have been a decade ago. This is back when, like, after you watched all the discs on DVD, well, you know, ain't no internet, so you might as well just watch them again with commentary on. And I forget who it was that said it, but the vibe on set was, around the time they shot this, that people knew that there was a lot outside of their control, and they knew that they loved Firefly. They were near the end of their first season. And I can't remember if they had heard some preliminary information about how it was going to be distributed? Or because I would imagine that you hear pretty early on that they don't plan to air them in order and all this stuff. And as a result, the vibe on set, and again, this is the story that I'm half remembering from the DVD commentary, was that when they did that final eulogy for their fallen comrade, even though he was a total jerk and tried to scam them to the end, it was really a funeral for the show. And that in their hearts in that moment, they're all like, hey man, this has been a great thing. What we've done is a great thing. And it might be, that's all that this is that we had a wonderful summer camp experience.
Yeah. Well, I can absolutely see that. And I love, speaking of that eulogy, I love that his message, you hear it three times and you have a different reaction as a viewer each time. The first time you hear it, it's, oh, wow. You know, a fallen comrade on hard times. How horrible. And the second time you hear it is like, what a jerk. Totally played their heartstrings to con them. What an ass. And then the third time you're like, wow, he didn't realize when he recorded this how right he was about what he's saying.
Yeah.
It's genius.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good. Now, having said all that, now I'm going to undo all the nice things that we were just projecting. This is a boring episode. This is one of the worst episodes. It's not great.
So it's fine on my scale, and you hate it.
Yeah, which
no,
which
this would be like an I fell asleep watching it on Brian's scale. He genuinely doesn't.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean by it's a straight ahead episode. Like, there's a couple of points around it that are fine, that are good, but there is nothing special in the majority of it. It's again, to me, it's fine because you're like, hey, Quippy Mal and Inara and Zoe, and you got a little doctor banter in there. But yeah, this one doesn't stand out for me either.
Yeah. Although I will say there is the bright shining spot is this is the first and I believe maybe the only episode that we see confident casual dating between Kaylee and the doctor, and that's fun to see.
Oh yeah, I actually really adore that alien scene at the beginning. And if there's anything wrong, like seriously wrong with the episode, it's that is set up as a much more important story element than it is, because I think when it was written, it was meant to just be carrying on this constant, are they, aren't they?
Well, by the way, I also adore that they borrowed some of the trappings of the 1800s, the traveling medicine man show and the 10-in-1 sideshow and all that stuff. I love the reimagining of all those bygone artifacts of the vaudeville days.
Another little piece of world building that I always like is the use of the Orthodox Jewish postal carrier that's a friend of Mal's, who's like, wait a minute. You can't have that here. I'm not going to turn you in or anything, but you need to go on.
Yeah. And then later on, he defends himself saying like, I never saw a body. So, yeah. That's a real, I mean, there might've been a body shaped box that showed up, but
that you mention it. Yeah. No, that's good firefly stuff.
I got to tell you, Tom, I am unbelievably excited about this rewatch for one reason only. This will be the second time in my entire life I've watched the entire Firefly series in a lead up to watch the Serenity movie. That's going to be so much fun to re-experience and relive that moment.
I don't think I've actually done it in this kind of compressed, well, not even compressed time period, but like in this orderly of a fashion.
Sure.
Because I'm usually like, oh, okay, I'll watch the last three episodes in Serenity on this plane flight because that's how long it is, right?
Right.
But I haven't like 1, 2, 3, 4, like marching order all the way up either.
I don't know how much time I have, and I don't know how temperamental my 13-year-old will be.
What are you trying to say?
Are you okay,
Brian?
I was trying to say that in a... I would hope that between now and when we watch Serenity,
it's funny. Yeah, I just need you to carry me.
I what I'm trying to say is I would love it if my kids love this the way I love this. And ooh, I don't know how many more opportunities I have to try to get them, because it would be great if I could get them excited about it just in time for us to all watch Serenity together and have them appreciate what that movie is like in the context of knowing the TV show.
So you're not saying when you can't run, you crawl, and when you can't do that.
Yes, yes.
To carry you is what
I dug the fact that that was not a heavy-handed message, but instead it was always referenced to in passing as like it's something they knew, but we didn't have to have force fed to us.
Yeah.
It was good. It was very well handled.
Well, that is it for this episode of Spoiler in Time. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, let us know in the collection box, patreon.com/cordkillers, because if you're watching this on like a Wednesday or a Thursday, you can get it earlier. Everybody who supports us on Patreon gets it right in the exclusive Patreon feed at patreon.com/cordkillers. We'll talk to you later.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.